The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to a remarkable photographer, Deborah Feingold. She just published a collection of work that previously appeared in Musician, Rolling Stone, and even Star Hits. It's simply called Music. Stick around. If today's interview is not in focus, you know Deborah is not to blame. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of Madonna wannabes who can study Deborah Feingold's iconic lollipop photo of the pop princess for hours and never quite be able to duplicate that look. In the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Here's a story I don't think I've told before. Many years ago, I had an idea to approach Paul Schaefer about helping him write his memoirs. My agent tracked down the band leader of The Late Show with David Letterman's agent, who ran the idea by Paul, and pretty quick, we were on a four-way conference call. Paul was very excited about the idea, and when we got off the phone, he said he wanted to meet the following week. Great, I said. Terrific, my agent said. So the next day, my agent called Paul's manager to make the arrangements for me to fly to New York City. Fly? The man said. Turned out they assumed I lived in the city. That's what you call a deal breaker. I did not write that book. Now, I was reminded of that story the first time I thumbed through Deborah Feingold's new collection of photographs, Music. When I saw a 1987 shot of Paul lounging in front of, seriously now, a place called Paul's Lounge. And later, exploring Deborah's website, I saw that she also shot the cover for We'll Be Here for the Rest of Our Lives, a swing and showbiz saga that Paul eventually wrote with David Ritz. Now, both are wonderful shots. Like most everything else Deborah does, pick up her book and you'll instantly recognize countless images from Madonna and Lollipop, to barefoot Keith Richards, as well as from big-jacketed David Byrne to Kid Creole and the Coconuts. Now, if you're not a music fan, you probably know a certain book cover Deborah shot, featuring a future leader of the free world. It was called The Audacity of Hope, and the author was a little-known guy named Barack Obama. Deborah Feingold, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
So glad to have you. It's nice to see you in front of the camera. I know that doesn't happen too often with people in your line of business.
Correct.
And simple one-word answers are good, too.
Okay. It gets lengthier, I assure you.
I'm sure. Well, so tell us about Music. How did organizing this particular collection come about? And, you know, what are some of the highlights in the book for you?
Well, I think the biggest highlight is that I actually did it, which I don't think until the last few years I ever really thought that I don't even think I, people would say you should do a book, but I didn't see it. I didn't get it. I just kept working. It wasn't until maybe 2 years ago that an assistant I was working with, who also shoots music, Matt McGinley, we were discussing the book, because at that point I was thinking of just including all of the iconic figures that I'd shot over the years. And he said, no, no, the book you need to do is just your musicians, because you were there at the beginning of a lot of people's careers in contemporary music. And you've got stuff that other people don't have, and you've got stories that other people don't have. And I thought about it for about a minute, and I said, you're absolutely right. So that's how it came about.
I'm always fascinated. I love having photographers on the show, as well as comedians for that matter, because the perspective is very different from, let's say, a musician or an author. I mean, you're seeing the world through the lens. You're looking for something particular. And in the images in music, in your book, I mean, I'm reminded of a lot of things from my own history and things that I remember from the magazines or just from that era. And it's interesting that you have to be convinced sometimes that, oh, that's a book, huh?
Yeah, I mean, as much, you know, I'm a photographer, but I'm also a working girl. So, you know, I kept my focus on working, but now that I'm older
okay,
and perhaps a bit more reflective, it didn't take much to convince me that, yes, in fact, there is something there. And I have always been, well, I would say to you, modest, but that's sort of like kind of an empty word. I think I was more insecure than I was modest. Hmm. And not anymore. I'm a big shot now. Boy, a little bit of confidence can go really deep in strange places.
Wow. How would you have done if you had that confidence? How would that have affected you 20, 25 years ago, do you think?
I can't go there, because I was who I was, and all your experience makes you who you are. And those experiences just kept building and building. And with age and having a daughter and, you know, experience, you know, I was also homeschooled, if you will. I never studied photography. I taught myself. And I think there was some, I don't know if the word would be insecurity in that, but it wasn't like I had a testing ground while I was at school. So it just took a while for it all to catch up with me, sort of emotionally and intellectually, and it's all caught up now.
You know, I've talked to a lot of rock photographers from the same era that you've worked. Bob Gruen, for example, and now I'm going to draw a blank, but several people from that era. And it's interesting, because that was a time coming up, I'll see if you agree, when you could kind of talk your way into a place and take pictures, as I think you have a story about Prince, for example, that it doesn't really exist that way. And the expectation today of a young photographer – that's okay. Just ignore it. The expectation of a young photographer today is not the same. They're expected to have all kinds of work. They're expected to have all sorts of technical expertise that, you know, maybe you didn't have when you started.
It is so embarrassing.
It's okay. We all have phones.
And she'll keep calling.
I have phones. You want to just tell her? Go ahead.
I'm going to just tell her.
Okay.
I'm going to text her that I'm on an interview, and I'm going to apologize. But I have been a single mom, and I'm just going to tell her. Sweetie, I'm on Skype on an interview, and now you're on too, so I'm going to hang up now, okay? And I'll talk to you in about an hour. Okay, bye-bye. Bye. You know, I'm a single mom. I've got a daughter. It's a connection that...
Completely understand. We got a Snapchat from my daughter at 5:30 this morning.
No.
She's a freshman at college. And someone pulled the fire alarm at 5:30. And they all had to leave the building. And then at 5:50, when they were all back in the room, someone pulled it again. So I get it completely. I understand how that is.
Okay. She won't call again.
How old is your daughter?
Well, old enough that she's 22.
Okay.
But she's on a new adventure. She started graduate school last week and just kind of getting organized. Okay, enough of that.
Okay.
First of all, I want to I remember everything you said, and I'll even add more to that.
Okay.
It's always hard to say, was it a different time? Because that's what old people say. And while I've been discussing this book, I've had to be really careful not to sound like an old person. Like, how has digital affected your life? Everybody is a photographer now. What is that like for you? Okay. So that's in every interview.
Yeah.
But it was special. But I want to say something. We knew it was special. We knew because we saw it changing as well. We knew because restrictions midway through were starting to occur with record companies. We were a smaller group. Now, in my case, perhaps a little differently than Bob Gruen's, I wasn't hanging out with people. I was working for Musician Magazine when the engine started moving. And Musician Magazine was exciting, as you may or may not know, because at that time you had Cream, you had Circus, you had Rolling Stone, you had Downbeat. But you didn't have somebody who was doing all of that, plus throw in some new age and world music. So I had the best job on the planet. I wasn't following one group of people and hanging out and going to the clubs. I was all over the place. And so my experience was a little different. Plus, it wasn't just street shooting, you know? I mean, I was shooting... The weirder my stuff was, the more support I got. I mean, I say weird, but you can see in some of the photos, you might go, what? But I had a lot of support in expressing my vision, which was really cultivated by my beginnings of shooting musicians with jazz musicians and improvisation and breaking rules. And because I didn't go to school... those mistakes I made were okay. Cause I, you know what I'm saying? It was like, I was just in there all raw and naive and passionate. And did I answer any of those questions?
Yeah, you did. And you opened the door for more questions. For example, how did you get to the point of starting to work for all those music magazines? Was there a particular break? Was there a photo that you shot, a concert? You know, what happened?
So I graduated Emerson College in 73. I'm not going to go into my back history, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I'd always used photography. It had always been a hobby, which I always laugh and say, you don't hear people use that word hobby, but hobbies were big in the 50s or 60s. You know, this is a generation of, this is easy. I think I can make some money out of this. Or, yeah, I really like doing this. How can I make a ton of money? A hobby you did because you just simply loved it. Mm-hmm. And we all had a lot of hobbies. But photography was my hobby. In terms of being realistic, I had a teaching degree. I had no idea what I wanted to do. When I graduated, I got a job teaching photography in a prison because I was torn between wanting to do some kind of socially conscious work, and teach and do photography. So I got it. And I had been teaching photography to different types of people with different needs my whole life, you know. So I, got a job teaching photography in a detention center outside of Boston proper. And I had my own cell, which I created into a dark room. And I was doing that when I graduated college. But simultaneously, I ended up meeting a jazz musician who lived in my building. Fast forward, fell in love, started photographing him and his world and different bands, and just loving the life. It was a freedom I never knew. I didn't have to be a teacher. I actually met a group of people that were just doing something that they loved. And I know this sounds very 70s, but it was, you know, maybe they weren't going to save the world, but their energy going out into the world was very positive. So I gave myself permission to do something I loved at that point. Ended up moving to New York 4 years later with a different jazz musician because he had done everything he could in Boston. It was his turn to go to New York. And I said, please take me with you. And he did. We did. He had a friend that was starting his own jazz label called Artist House. And his name was John Snyder. And John and my boyfriend at the time had gone to college together. So John got Scott Lee, bass player, a job with one of his artists. So Scott went on the road with Chet Baker. Oh, wow. And John asked me if I would like to shoot Chet Baker. So that was my first real shoot in New York City. And then John gave me a few more people to shoot. And it's all 35 millimeter black and white. I don't know how to shoot color. And I got a phone call one day from this little music magazine out in Boulder, Colorado. And a man called Sam Holdsworth calls up and he says, we've got this magazine called Musician and we're mostly focused on jazz. And we'd like to do a story on Artist House, which was John Snyder's new label. So that is how my relationship with Musician began, and then it turned into they moved out east, and I shot for them for 5 years straight as their chief photographer, and then freelanced for them because at that point I then went on to other magazines, Musician, and I mean, Rolling Stone offered me a contract because we were kind of, you know, kicking up some dust. I mean, people were getting envious of what we were shooting. We were doing everything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, as the magazine moved and it broadened its scope and it got tremendous interviews and access to people. I lived through that. I remember. I
mean, yeah, it was great.
It was a remarkable time. So I guess the essence of the answer is right place, right time, right attitude.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right? I mean,
yeah. Or I'm a chosen person. I don't know.
Or it could be that. Yeah, that chosen person, that would just be two words. I use six. I mean,
okay. But yeah, it was, you know, you're right. But also, yeah, that is, I mean, right. There you go.
And as you started out, because you didn't have the training in this, how do you conquer things like lighting and location and all that kind of stuff? The things that, you know, some people they study a long time before they tackle, and then some people they just jump right in, and I guess that's where style comes from.
Yeah, so, you know, my early work is still my favorite work for all those reasons, because I can see what was going on. And also, working for a musician, there weren't any rules, and it changed, you know. As I moved on to more high-profile magazines, I felt restricted, and it's still joyous. That's why the book was easy for me to edit, and a lot of it is early work, because Musician magazine just asked me to do what I saw, but it got a little trickier. You know, I can remember working for other magazines, and I liked playing around with different films. I wanted to see things I hadn't seen before. And if you look at my work, you're not going to go, oh, my God, she was such an innovator. But I know what I was doing and where I was going. And, you know, all the way through, I got a lot of flack and didn't work for some people after a while because I didn't want to do it exactly the way they expected it. And I was always afraid it was going to, you know, kind of affect my vision, and at times it did, because I did want to work, but I was always balancing between what they wanted and what I wanted, and often I would just shoot stuff for myself on the side. So it was interesting as time went on, you know, as I said. So that early stuff, don't we all feel that way about our early – well, I do, at least about my early work.
I know the difference between my early work and my later work. I was thinking as you started talking before about the first two celebrities that I interviewed, because I did a lot of music stuff. 78, the first one was Frank Zappa in his hotel room at the Royal Biscayne Hotel, and I'm a freshman. And this interview was actually posted because I had the audio. It's terrible. It's awful. It's just horrible. But I have it. And I was terrible, and I learned a valuable lesson that day in terms of research, because I trusted the guys in the dorm room next to me, and they gave me every bit of I think we call it now urban urban myths. And right. I asked him about every urban myth about Frank Zappa in 1978, and he finally said, "Where do you get these questions from?" He says, "Just talk to me like a human being."
Oh, that's great.
And then a few years later, it was Charlie Daniels backstage at a show, and he was having a press conference, and there was about five of us in a circle. And for some reason, I just froze. I couldn't lift my head up to look at the man. I said, "Well, Mr. Daniels," he says, "you call me Charlie, son. Mr. Daniels is my daddy." And I was like, "Oh, okay, Mr. Daniels." You know, and I mean, you just kind of – you get comfortable after a while. You realize what you can do and what you can't do. And I assume that's, you know, part of the picture here.
Yeah, I learned a lot. You know, I think that's interesting because people don't usually ask you about that. But I learned so much. Like with you used Frank Zappa. There was a photographer that shot him a lot, and she tried to control that no one else could do it. And I got the assignment. I didn't feel like he was that happy to be there. And I love the picture in the book.
Yeah, it's the last picture, I think, in the book.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was doing to me. You know, I felt challenged a little bit. But what that photo says to me is I was right in his frickin' face. You know, I was still a fairly young, you know, I wasn't that young. But, you know, he had a huge reputation. And I did stand up to him. And I did, you know, come on, give it to me. And I did that. And I was always somewhat shy. I'm not anymore. But, you know, that's funny because that is exactly why that photo is where it is in the book. And he also, I learned from that shoot too, I'm not backing down, not anymore.
I get that. And yeah, having dealt with him, I didn't know to be intimidated until I got there, and then it took a little while, and then he realized that I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
He came out more as the dad than the you know, full of himself musician that a lot of people saw. So it was nice. It was nice.
That's interesting.
Tell us, I read this story, and I don't remember if this was in the book, or I think I saw this in a Tennessean story about you, a story about Prince, how you wanted to get some pictures and were turned away at first.
Yeah, it was an assignment. I think it's 80, 79 or 80. And it was for the Soho Weekly News, which was, you know, the rival of the Village Voice. And they asked me to, they said, you know, there's a new guy coming to town from Minneapolis. There's a lot of buzz about him. He's playing at the Bottom Line, which was a great place to hear music and to shoot. And we want you to get some concert shots. And, you know, I was always shooting concerts. I really enjoyed it. And then he says, yeah, we want you to see if you can go backstage and get some shots. So I easily could have lied and said they wouldn't let me do it, but I was way too scared to do that. And I was even more scared to go backstage because usually, you know, the magazines didn't leave it up to you to do that. So I went backstage and knocked on the door, and this guy answered and said, no, Prince doesn't do photos, you know, portraits. So I was very relieved, but I'm like, okay, thank you very much.
Right.
As opposed to, oh, no, really, just one. You know, I was happy to leave. I didn't feel like I had the right equipment. I was only using black and white. I knew it wouldn't be probably lit well. You know, remember that this is 30 years ago, so it's not like I can look at the back of a camera and go, oh, cool, I did it. And so I rushed back to the pole. The opening act came out, and I get a tap on my shoulder. And the same guy says, follow me, takes me behind the stage and says, you were so nice about that. Come on and take a few photos. And I did. I got through half a roll. He was more shy than me, which you can see in the photos. And I didn't know what else to do. I shot it horizontally. I shot it vertically, the foot up, the foot down. There was nowhere to move. And then I hear coming out of my mouth, oh, would you like to take a picture of me? And I have a portrait of me by Prince, unsigned, but valuable to me nonetheless.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it was just an example of, you know, I was never, I mean, I can be pushy. I wouldn't have a book if I wasn't pushy, but I like to think I was always appropriate. And I personally never begged. It's just not attractive to me.
No, and it's not. And, you know, there's enough people that do that, and it doesn't work for them. And it really, I guess it works for some people, but I just don't find that that's, you know, you have to live with yourself when it's over. And that's just not the way I would want to.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, I believe in karma, so I guess it worked out.
Well, let me ask you about some other particular shots in the book. The photo of Keith Richards barefoot. It's just a great picture. And, I mean, let's face it, it's Keith Richards. There's a lot of great pictures of Keith Richards out there. The craggy face and, you know, all the miles on him. Can you tell us a little bit about that shot?
Well, it's a pretty simple story. It was shot for Mojo, and the actual cover, which it was used as, was him holding a record. They asked all these musicians to hold up records, to be photographed with the record that most influenced them. Hmm. And I don't remember the name of it. But that was the cover. And then after I finished shooting it, I really felt that I didn't, again, have something just for myself. And I just asked if I could take a few more pictures. So I did that, and I also shot him in another room. And, the photo in itself is quite simple. And I have to be honest, I'm surprised at the amount of people that love that image. And I've come to realize that the colors are beautiful, but it's his expression that I think is something people aren't accustomed to.
You don't see a lot of Keith smiling.
No, and there's a relaxed look there, but yet there's something really beautiful about it at the same time. And I had never really looked at that photo, but it was his manager had a copy of it. And when he was doing his book for Little Brown, she presented that image to them, and it was selected to be on the back. And that was the first time I ever paid attention to it.
Wow.
I didn't see it because there was another picture that I liked better.
I didn't realize that that was on the back cover. I read that book on my Kindle, so I didn't actually see the back cover. And it's funny that you mentioned the book because having read that book, which I thought was a phenomenal book, I just loved the book, and I came away with such a completely different idea of that man and his intelligence and his intellect, and it just that seeing that picture now after reading the book, it just meant something completely different to me. So yeah, it's a great shot. There's another one I want to ask you about, and it's not one of the bigger stars, but I like a lot of people am friends on Facebook with Nile Rodgers from Chic. So you know, I just think he's a tremendous musician. He's an interesting guy. You know, we're not friends, but we're, you know, connected on Facebook. But just recently, he was talking about, I think he was recording some stuff with Duran Duran, and he was talking about, I can't remember the connection, but he was talking about Bernard Edwards, who's in the photo that you have, and how much he misses him, and how, I think he said something about being in the studio with Duran Duran was as close as he could recall the experience of being with Bernard. And so you have this very early picture of them, still looking rather street. They're, I was going to ask you if you can remember, where that was shot approximately.
Yeah, I think it was, I used to spend a lot of time at the power station.
Oh.
For some reason, that was where I ended up doing a lot of shoots. And I think that was outside of it because that they spent a lot of time in there as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, did you read Niall's book?
I did not.
Hey, boy.
Really?
Read that.
Okay.
You don't know someone until you read something, their autobiography. What a life that man led. And I was really lucky to meet them right before it all went super crazy. Mm-hmm. But they were just so kind and so nice to me. And I actually discovered some other photos of them that I had taken. I shot Niall 3 or 4 times, but they were just sort of always around and just really sweet guys whenever I showed up for a shoot. They were producing a lot of the records, I guess, that I was shooting bands for at the time.
I'm actually reading a book right now. It's due out in a couple of weeks. It's called I'm the Man. It's by Scott Ian of Anthrax, a band I never had any interest in. I'm now 2/3 of the way through the book. I have never heard any of their music, to the best of my knowledge. And it's a fascinating book, and I'm actually going to do it backwards. I'm now going to go and look up some of his music because I thought his story was so fascinating. So, yeah, if you think that Nile Rodgers' book is good, I'm going to go and find it.
You know, because it's got the disco thing in it. It's got, it's gut-wrenching. Hmm. It's excess, redemption, illness, but always a fairly healthy ego. It was a pretty tough to read. Weaker people would have crushed under all of those circumstances.
All right, I'll look that one up. And what about Elvis Costello? Like Keith Richards, I thought it was it's an image of him that's a little different. Eyes are closed in that photo, right?
Yeah, he's kind of crying, and I think wishing that the shoot was over, actually. Because that was a quick shoot for a record company. It was either at the record company or in a hotel room, and I brought a seamless to put behind him. But I never thought of that as a terribly successful shoot. And when I was putting the book together, I really wanted him in there. So I went back and looked at the film again, and I pulled that out. I'd overlooked it, and that's how it ended up in the book.
Yeah, it's a great shot. It's a great shot. And there's one photo. It's a beautiful shot, but it seems a little out of place with the rest of the book, sort of, to me anyway. Although it's a great photo, it's the photo of Eddie Van Halen and his then-wife, Valerie Bertinelli. And it's a beautiful shot of the two of them until you look and you see that his hand is, like, between her thighs. His left hand is between her thighs, right up against her crotch. And I went, what the hell is going on there?
Well, you should have seen what happened after that shoot.
Oh, God. No,
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Nothing ever happened.
Oh, okay.
That was a shot where I kept saying, should I put it in? Should I take it out? Should I put it in? And for me, because it's my photographs, I just put it in there because it was very early in my career. It was really fun. It's not the way you would ever think of seeing, you know, Eddie Van Halen. And I was the editor of the book, so I put it in.
It's a lovely photo. It's just, you have to look at it twice and go, what am I looking at?
Oh, we draped this gauzy fabric around her. There was, you know, there wasn't ever a whole lot of, you know, styling. You know, it was just improvising. It happened. I can't explain it. It was shot in my same apartment that I shot Madonna, same circumstance. You know, everything was just kind of put together. But it was a special shoot, just in how much fun we all had. It was unusual, I think, maybe for all of us. It was just really silly. But I also, in the book, paged it next to Spinal Tap.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah.
I tried to make it a continuous, you know, page of just laughter.
And there's one other kind of silly shot. Well, I can think of two silly shots in the book. Annie Lennox as kind of a mime, at least that's the way I saw her. And in a different way, Billy Joel, just, you know, on the chaise longue and in the backyard, feet up, this very young Billy. It was another one that I really liked in the book.
Well, that's the Billy one, the one with Annie Lennox holding her hands up. Sometimes when I was really quiet, maybe people were really uncomfortable, so they would just start to do things. But it wasn't like I said, oh, this would be really cool if you put your hands up. But it just happened, you know, and I think if I had choreographed that, I probably wouldn't have liked it. So the fact that it was just there and I shot it, it's one of my favorite photos. The one with Billy Joel is interesting because I started writing a, for lack of a better word, a blog talking about the photos for the last 2 years or so, sporadically. And I realized something when I went and rewrote the story about that blog, and I'd never felt like I had done as good a job as I could have until this year when I started thinking about it, and I realized I kept wanting him to do something over the top. I wanted him to be a rock star. He was the most, you know, international person I'd shot at that point, and I felt like I couldn't move him to greatness. And then I realized that it was really just my perception that was askew, that I was at his home and he was relaxing and that no one had a photo like that. And I thought, well, this is too easy and this isn't good enough. But I actually have come to really embrace that photo, having a much better understanding of myself and of him in that. So now I like it a lot.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, I think it's a wonderful photo. And your description of it reminds me of when what I do with these video interviews, when it works, it's usually someone is very relaxed. They're in their office or they're in their home or living room. There was one woman who did the interview in bed. I mean, and it's just, you know, you're relaxed and hopefully, you know, you're just chatting. And Billy just looks like Billy. He doesn't look like Billy Joel. And it's cool that way. So
yeah, but it's interesting that I was so hard on myself for 35 years, and I finally have come to embrace it.
Well,
that's interesting.
Yeah. Now, what about for every picture that's in there? I'm going to guess that there must be a dozen that could have taken its place. Was it hard culling it to the number of photos that you have?
No, it was disappointing. It wasn't hard at all. The things I thought would be the hardest about the book ended up being the absolute easiest. And that was editing and laying it out and the title. It was like fun. And I wanted a bigger book, but the publisher didn't. So I could have put in 50 more photos easily. But, you know, sometimes you don't get everything you want in life.
Well, you do another book after it, that's all.
No, because these were the top. But a lot of these photos were always my special photos, so I didn't have a problem editing them at all because I'd always – there was a few that were surprises that I put in for the book, but for the most part, these were always my most special photos. You know, they were the ones I worked really hard towards trying to get during the session. It's not like every photo looked great because it didn't. So, you know, and then laying it out I did with a friend of mine. And it was so much fun. We agreed on everything. We were laughing. I mean, it was a joy. And there was never any other name for the book than the, you know, I'm not that deep a person. Like, they're photographs and they're musicians. Music.
One of the things I noticed from the book, music, and then also looking at the, you've got a whole selection of book covers that you've shot on your website. And I'd encourage people to go and look at that, DeborahFeingold.com.
Yep.
But and I don't know. This is going to sound like an odd observation. You shoot. This sounds really bad. You shoot African Americans extremely well. I don't know how to put it any other way. From the jazz photos and some of the, you know, the photo of Nile and Bernard I mentioned, Curtis Blow, LL Cool J in the book covers, a wide range of book covers. It's phenomenal. I mean, find me someone else who has shot Barack Obama, Clarence Thomas, and Al Sharpton. I mean, you know, and so I don't really know if I have a question there or if you've even noticed that or if you've gotten hired to do those, so many of these types of books because of that. I don't know where I'm going with that exactly.
Well, no, I don't think race plays into it, but I think that I get hired to do those because I make people feel comfortable really quickly. I work really, really fast. Mm-hmm. At this point, I'm older than most of the people I work with and not easily intimidated. I am very focused while I'm working. I know what I need to do. I'm dependable. I can get what they need. So I think it has to do with that more than anything else. And that's what I think.
Okay. And I got to ask, I mean, you shot Barack Obama before he was president. Anything you remember thinking about the man then? Was it just an assignment you went in, you took care of it? Or, you know, was it presented to you as anything particularly special at the time?
It was special because it was after the Democratic speech that he had given. And the art direction was actually to photograph him with the skyline behind him of Chicago. And I didn't know that much about that world, but I knew that that was not a great idea because yeah. I could see already that that's not what he was being associated with. So it was a very difficult shoot, putting him against a skyline of Chicago, and he came late and we were out on a jetty and the wind blew up and one of my light stands went into the water, and then because he was late, the light shifted and then he was squinting and it was awful. But being who I am, with the experience that I have, you always have a second plan. And I stayed in the hotel right across the street from this. And I had set up in my hotel room a little tiny studio. And I asked if he wouldn't mind coming across the street and, you know, explained what I had just said. And that became the cover. But I'm sitting at the edge of my bed, and he's probably 3 feet in front of me. That's how small the room was.
Wow.
And that was the cover. Because I knew that's what I did best. You know, once someone's outside, it's really about them being outside. And I wanted it to be about him. Mm-hmm. And I know that's what I can do. I can get right in there and make him feel comfortable. And I probably told a bad joke, but I shot off a lot of film, and that's what they used. I've never seen one of those other pictures published.
And what about, I'm going to guess that you must have heard more words spoken by Clarence Thomas than have been said on the Supreme Court in all his years. What was that shoot like? Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, don't hate me, but it was a really nice shoot. He was extremely personable to us, told us a lot of family stories, and was happy to do anything. You know, I don't take with me my own, you know, this is a job. And I was a single mom since she was, you know, not 9 years old. Mm-hmm. So I can split myself and divide myself. And I had a great day, and it was a great shoot.
I always assumed that the man had to be very personable to reach the heights that he has, whatever the man's politics are, whatever the issues there. But he had to be personable to be able to, you know, sustain everything else that's gone on. So I was curious.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like the world of theater to me. You know, it's, I don't know. Let's not even go there. It was a job, and a job done well.
There you go. And how did the book covers come about? Because that is different than, you know, shooting for a magazine, I think.
I actually like it because it's very specific, mm-hmm. about what they need and what they want you to do. And I never really worked with art directors all that much. So I enjoyed the collaboration. Some of them, if you look on the website, we built sets and everything was always low budge. So I like a lot of challenges. And I think that initially I was getting the work because, you know, in the 80s, you know, people would see your name because you would work for a lot of, I shot babies and everybody wanted to work with you when, in the 80s if you were at Rolling Stone. So, you know, and then it became that, oh, Deb's really good with people, so she, you know, recommending me to other people. And I don't know why, but I still work.
That's very good. By the way, I want to mention and thank Anthony DeCurtis, who connected us. I had reached out to him about an interview, and he had mentioned that he had written the introduction to your book, which is a very fine introduction, I will add. So I want to thank him for making the introduction to you. So one of the things I guess that came out of this is it took you a long time to decide that you could do a book, that you had the right stuff to do a book, and I'm sure along the path of that you realized, oh, I have all this stuff in my files that I can remonetize again. So my question is, are you looking at your career any differently at this point and with this book in front of you? Are you thinking about other books you can do, other than music, let's say? Are you monetizing your archives in any way?
I always have to some extent. I mean, the book is a celebration, you know. Sometimes something is just what it is. And I think the book just is what it is. It's almost 40 years of work. Book publishing is not what it was. And I think it's great that I did this. I did it for me, for my daughter. I don't know what's next. Would I want to do another book? I don't know. I'm just kind of enjoying doing this Skype interview.
Well, thank you.
I'm kind of in the moment is where I'm at. And I'm not really sure what I'll do next. Or I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Fair enough. Well, folks, listen, you can find photographer Deborah Feingold's career-spanning collection, Music, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. And you know how that works if you've seen the show. Down here, either to the left or to the right of Deborah, beneath her, you'll see the cover of the book. You click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon. They can have it to you via drone within 30 minutes or less. Or if you want to do it the old-fashioned way, they can get it to you, you know, in a day or two via regular mail or UPS, FedEx, whatever you like. And Deborah, are you...
I'm leaving you about the drone.
But you know what? By the time somebody catches on and goes, wait a minute, they don't use drones yet. They probably will be using them. So right. I figure I'm safe. I mentioned your website. It's Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Feingold, F-E-I-N-G-O-L-D.com. People can see more of your work there. Archives of photos of magazine covers, of interior shots, book covers, all kinds of stuff. Are you also, do you do any of the social media stuff, Facebook, Twitter, any of that kind of thing?
Okay, so I'm going to do a little shout out. I'm going to be having a photo opening in LA on Thursday at Mr. Music Head Gallery. If anybody's out on Sunset, there's a big music festival going on. That's this Thursday. Tonight, I'm going to be at Staten Island, although you probably won't hear this tonight.
No.
And, I'm on Tumblr, got about 13,000 followers. Now, if each of them bought the book, and Facebook and Twitter.
Okay, great. And we'll have all those links on the Mr. Media page. So, folks, you can just kind of, after you order the book, go further down the page, and we'll have all the connections to Deborah via social media. It's been delightful having you on the show, Deborah, and I enjoyed the book. Always enjoyed the work. And thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been an absolute delight.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human?
I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at buzzburbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
The Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network, and catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. This is Adam and Asid to the Extreme.
So, I'm sorry, did you ever see the film Rubber?
I've seen Flubber.
I've heard of Rubber. Isn't that about like a tire or something? Like,
it is. Dude, Adam, you got to watch this movie. I'm serious.
Rubber?
It's so great. It's about a serial killer that is a tire. You know, kind of like Christine was a car. It's a tire.
And how much LSD was the director on when he...
I don't know. But it's great because what happens, without giving anything away, the tire just kind of rolls into place, very sinister, and there's the person in the background. This was a highly entertaining movie. And the greatest thing, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but there's a scene where the local sheriff has got all his deputies together. He's describing this tire, and one of the deputies goes... Is he black?
Right here on the Realm Network.